Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We are here at Shinnecock Hills. It is Monday, May 21st, here at Media Day. Brendan Porath joining from SB Nation. Welcome back.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Van Valkenburg from ESPN. We are not crowded around my cell phone for the first time ever for an in-person podcast. Hello, welcome.
Glad to be here.
DJ Pie, of course, very familiar
always
to the pun.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. All right, first time playing Shinnecock for all four of us. We'll go around the horn here. Brendan, I want your initial reactions to the golf course.
It was fantastic, beautiful. The greens were not running like they will, for sure, in 3 weeks here. They were slow, which is understandable. It's May 21st up in the north, you know. New York, Northeast, but it's in beautiful shape. It's, you know, they've got it lush and ready to go, and it was harder than I anticipated for a person of my handicap. I'm not a good player.
What is your handicap?
I said 18 today.
Okay.
I mean, I don't play very much anymore, and it was harder than I expected. I lost some balls in the fescue, drives that I thought weren't bad. You know, like, I anticipate to lose balls if I'm spraying it, but I thought I was like drawing balls off the lines, they told me, and then I lost ball. It was hard, man. I mean, there's, I remember fescue gate at Erin Hills last year with the overspray. Maybe we have fescue gate too.
Oh,
I don't know.
Starting the controversy 3 weeks in advance.
That's what we do with the U.S. Open. We like to make, you know, these mountains out of molehills there.
Do you think your driving performance should be used as the baseline for how to set up the golf course? Would that be fair to say?
No.
I don't think Mike Davis has left yet. If you want to catch him, you might want to give him the full debrief.
I'm going to have to go catch, you know, this 18 handicap chop.
Mike, just watch me hit a couple balls here. Tell me what you think.
I hit it farther than Corey Pavin and Mike Weir. But, no, I'm just saying, like, from a lower handicap standpoint, it was harder than I expected. Beautiful course, incredibly scenic. They're obviously setting up all the infrastructure and got that going on. But you just felt like you were walking like on historic ground, and it was cool.
KVV.
I do love the fact that the last few U.S. Open courses, even including Chambers, that there's like a point where you can stand at the top of it and see like almost the whole course. You can see how vast it is. That was really cool to stand today. It's the oldest clubhouse in America. They made a big sort of production of that, and one of the original five, you know, golf courses that sort of set the standard for the game. And yeah, I guess my sort of biggest takeaway is Tiger can't win here. So, I mean, you can't.
Based
you can't
on
drive
you
it,
playing the course,
based
you
on me driving, yeah, you can't hit it. You know, east west. You can't go, you know, the side of the fairway and not be punished. And, you know, I don't think that would, to me, would probably eliminate Phil too. Like, you know, I don't know how. I'd love to go back and watch how he competed in 2004 here, because, you know, I hit some balls that I thought were going to be okay, and not. It isn't just the fescue; you get into spots where it's really terrible. Like, there's like these little holes in the rough out there, and so every lie that you have, it's like sitting down where the ball is like half into the dirt, and you can't control at all where it's how it's going to come out. Like, even if you hammer it, and so that was my biggest takeaway: was you got to be in the fairway, and you got to, you know, take advantage of that when you are, because you're going to get punished hard.
It's demonstrably wider, as everyone's saying, than it was 04 and 95.
Right.
But I don't know that I would say it was wide compared to, like, as a high handicapper, compared to some. I played Pinehurst too. I played Riviera. I don't know. I just felt more comfortable on those courses, and I haven't played a ton of great courses, but, you know, I don't know that it's, like, super wide.
There's a couple holes out there that felt wide, right? When you get up in the fairway and you're like, wow, okay, there's a ton of space up here. But there is several holes out there where I'm looking at that and, like, clenching the club a bit tighter. Like, all right, you better find the fairway here. And this does not feel like a wide fairway. It's probably wider than it looks. But, I mean, man, if I don't know. It's averaging, what, 42 yards wide? And I think in 2004 it averaged 26 yards wide. I don't know how you play this golf course from 26 yards wide.
I agree. Yeah. And I think what was cool, what did they say for the members? The Core Crenshaw restoration brought it out to like 61 yards or something like that. So what was cool today was to be able to, if anybody comes to the tournament, to be able to see kind of the dark purple lines basically in the fescue where you can see where the fairway used to be with that restoration and kind of where they stretched it out to. A couple of my balls, I think, would have been in the fairway. I think Corin Crenshaw preferred a couple of my balls to be in the fairway, but that's neither here nor there.
The DJ line.
Exactly right.
The DJ pylon.
You were playing the proper angle.
I was. Well, so weirdly, speaking of the angles, I mean, I think that what was cool about it was I think they did a great job kind of hitting the happy medium with, you know, the holes where the angles seem to be really evident. Like I think it was like number 8. I want to say the short par 4 where it was just mega wide. I mean, that was a hole where, okay, like the angle is going to definitely be in play off the tee, and you know where the pin is totally changes things. But then you had something like number three,
the long
on the property line, like right next to National there, which was pretty cool in itself. Cool. But you know, that one it's a pretty dead straight hole. The green was big, but you know, didn't seem like you could kind of tuck it and kind of create a ton of crazy angles there. And you know, on a hole like that, the fairway was pretty narrow, and it was just, all right, you know, go out there and hit two good shots. So I think, I mean, I'm really, really pumped to see what happens with it, because I think they did a really good job striking that balance. And I think the other thing that was interesting, and Brennan, you mentioned at the beginning, was, you know, with how wet it is, and again, like, this not a slight in the least, I mean, it's May.
Brutal winter.
Brutal winter, and it's May, and we have 3 weeks, and they're going to, you know, let everything get nice and lush before they chop it down. But I think, you know, the firmer and faster the fairways get, obviously, the more narrow it gets, too. So getting some balls bouncing out there in the fairway and kind of having balls bounce into the fescue is a lot different than
I watched my guy
a couple of shitty players flying them into the fescue.
Today that still came up short.
I thought I was, like, just crushing the ball.
Nuking right.
The ball. And it makes sense. I mean, they're letting it grow and be healthy, and then they're going to soup it up in
it's
the next 3 weeks.
It's super cool to play the course three weeks before the U.S. Open, but it will play absolutely nothing like the one we just saw. So it was great to walk the walk and to see the shape of the holes and whatnot, but the experience is going to come from trying to get, for these guys, get close to those pins when it's firm, when it's tight lies around the green. And what they've implemented since 2004 is they've expanded the greens, and the areas around the greens are much more short grass than they are rough.
And you could see a ton of that out there. I mean, you could see,
it's everywhere.
I mean, Andy, you know, Andy, if you're listening, you would love to see the way that they've, like, tapered some of the edges and made them green where, you know, it was clearly used to be either long rough or fringe or, you know, just kind of nothing space. And the way that you could see some of the rolled edges and stuff and the way balls are going to bounce, you know, balls that aren't struck in the exact right spot are going to just get ejected, you know, if it plays as firm as they're hoping it will. So it was really cool. And I think the other thing that was really cool was that we caught it in some wind, which is, you know, that's such a huge thing. And it's so obvious to say, and it sounds stupid to say out loud, but another big focus of the restoration, I think, was like massive tree removal.
Yep.
And just having, you know, all those trees gone, it just opens it up so much more for wind and that kind of stuff. So I'm pumped. I hope they get a dry, windy, carnagey type of week, because that's my favorite to watch.
Shout out Mike Davis, potential fried egg listener, because he dropped both width and angle.
Yeah, exactly.
He also said
a lot of people are upset about you know, they're talking about, they're upset about the narrowing, which might have been a subtweet of Andy as
you
well.
You may have been reading.
Yeah.
Media members may have been reading articles about how it's been narrowing, and people will be focused on that. But actually, the green sizes, no one will talk about that.
The green sizes are.
He incepted
way
us
back.
Into talking about it.
One other thing I'd say is cool, because you get out here in this kind of farmland out, is I thought there was, especially the holes around the clubhouse, the undulation's awesome.
Oh, man. God,
the elevation change is like 9, 10. 10 was
nine going nine. Up the
It just
hill.
Felt oh 9, 10, like around the clubhouse where you're kind of going, it was really cool. It just felt like you were not in kind of like this rural beachland farmland area.
And this one, I don't always advocate for actually, like, you know, getting in your car and parking and going to tournaments, but if you're in the area, I mean, it's pretty cool to
I hope
see
it shows
place.
Up on TV the slopes on 9 and 10, especially, like you said, 10 is kind of an awkward tee shot, at least
so
I thought
cool.
But once you get over that hill, it is huge dip down the fairway, and but if you drive it that far, you're shooting up straight up to like a tabletop green that I imagine when it's firm, you can't even come close to holding. So guys are going to have to decide, do I try to drive it down to the bottom and have a flip wedge up to this tabletop, or do I sit back on the top of the hill, have 170, 190 in, try to hit a mid to long iron into that green? It's going to be kind of fascinating to watch.
Do you think
that
when it's firm and fast, the guys will be able to play irons, like driving irons off some of a lot of these tees? Like, it seemed to me like if you're in some of the narrow ones where you'd think if you're going to get 30 yards of roll, that an iron would be a great play on some of them. Not for like AMs like us, but you know, guys who can hit a two
iron. I say
iron,
that, but I mean, I played it as far back as they let us today, and yeah. I wanted nothing to do with where those U.S. Open tee boxes were on some of those holes. I mean, we walked back.
Did we catch the prevailing wind today?
We did have the prevailing wind. So the 16th hole, the par five,
which is about kind of like southeast.
Yeah, southwest wind.
Southwest.
We walked from the back tee, the red tee, which is the back that they had set up today, to the U.S. Open tee, and it took us a minute and 15 seconds to walk directly back. I mean, wow. I would have played it from back there, but I don't think I could reach the fairway. It was into the wind, honestly. Yeah. I mean, some of these tees are insane. And, I mean, I know when it plays fast and firm that it's going to play a lot shorter from back there, but, man, I mean, it's just, it's kind of silly. I mean, kind of, I don't want to do the whole distance debate here, but there's parts where, you know, there's tee boxes set like opposite of other tee boxes so that holes now crisscross, which is just kind of ridiculous. And just seeing how far they've stretched to the edge of the property to put some tees is kind of like, what are we doing here? But it's necessary. And I think going back to discussing what they've done with the fairways, I think if it was like the true 61 yard wide and whatever it was, I think it'd be too easy for these guys. I know that there's angles that come into play with wider fairways, but I think if it was wider than it was, I think that'd be too easy. And I enjoyed Aaron Hills,
yeah.
But
it is the great shame of Aaron Hills that the wind didn't blow.
Yes.
So we didn't get a real test in that sense. Like, yeah, we had a great champion and great leaderboard and stuff, but would have been fun to see if that would have, you know, been different.
At the same time, it was a par 72. And so at par 72 pro tournaments, yeah, scores are always going to be low. I mean, almost everyone I can think of in history, scores are low. And but Pebble Beach goes down to a par 71 for the U.S. Open, so it's not, its relation to par score is always lower than it is during the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. And obviously, the setup is different. But, I mean, this is going to be a par 70. So it's going to be, I mean, probably pretty similar scores overall to Aaron Hills. Just the relation to par is different. And I know it's this is 400 yards shorter, but I don't know.
Pars are relevant, man.
I know, man. we've been preaching that for a long time, but people still, so
live
many
under
people
par because it's totally irrelevant. Pars a construct, man.
People get so upset at low scores at the U.S. Open, and like even talking with some, like I know we talked to Curtis Strange a couple months ago on the podcast, and he's just like, I'm old school, man. I like it tough. I like it narrow, and I like the scores high. That's just kind of the way people view the U.S. Open. So
that's kind of what, like, Davis, like, so badly wanted to just, like you say, he was really doing the whole woke thing for, like, all the talking points with angles. We want to bring these cross bunkers into play. We want it to play, like, how Flynn intended.
Original shot values.
Yes.
Charles Blair McDonald. You guys may know him as C.B. McDonald. Like, that little
he was,
drop in there. He
think
was
about doing the whole thing, but he couldn't quite. Brandon was like, but, and then he went back to this, like, this contrivance that they're now calling the ultimate test, which they said about 35 times, but today in the press
it's
conference,
the ultimate test.
It's not the toughest test in golf. It's now the ultimate test. And so, like, he kind of came back to that. And one of his big things was, like, the ultimate test requires accuracy off the tee, which, like, he was getting into the narrowing. Like, he really, like, wanted to get, he's like, almost there, but he's like, then he had to come back to, well, the ultimate test requires accuracy, that you need to take a bigger part of that off the tee.
You made a good point today, DJ, talking about, you know, we talk about wide fairways, width, whatnot, but there's a difference between how that relates to the four of us playing a golf course and professionals actually playing the golf course.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think it's easy to think, like, you know, oh, Phil, he's what a wild driver of the golf ball. I'm like, well, yeah, he still hits it pretty goddamn good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So it's all relative, but like, I mean, everything like else in golf.
41-yard wide fairways for pros is wide. It's
super
plenty wide,
wide
enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, there should be a challenge off the tee for these guys, I think. And it doesn't – a course like this is not maybe as penal as, say, the old course is. If you're playing from the wrong fairway on the old course, you're on short grass, but there are certain pins you just can't even get anywhere remotely close to. It doesn't play to that level of
extreme
out here.
Yeah, it was hard to tell where those – maybe I just don't have the imagination, but, I mean, it was hard to tell where those pins were today without playing, you know, super spicy conditions. I mean, there. I know they're out there, and I know there were a couple shots that, you know, we had. What were we? The left of the par five. Was it number five?
Yes. Yeah.
Number five. I mean, if you're long left of there, you have this, which I was. You have this shot that is just like
impossible.
Impossible. But today, I mean, and I'm not a good wedge player by any stretch. But you know, today, Solly and I are both, you know, hit shots that go up and they basically check off a downslope, you know, and they check right by the hole, and it's like, I don't think that's gonna be possible.
So for those listening, it may be like, all right, well, why do we care what your conditions were when you played today? If it rains a lot,
because we have a microphone,
yeah.
And you don't. So you would listen to everyone. Sorry.
If it rains between now and the open, yeah. U.S. Open,
yeah.
I don't know what they're gonna do, because I mean, as great as well prepared as they are,
air underneath here, they can drive.
No, it and that's why I think that there is a chance if two things. If the wind doesn't blow, and if it rains between now and then, if it rains during the tournament, we could see some really low scores, I think, out here. I think this place is mega gettable. They said Bryson was out here a couple weeks ago, played U.S. Open tees, and Porat just got really excited. It was not windy, and he like went around pretty easily in 66. So those numbers are out there if the conditions don't really firm up. So I don't know what the forecast
looks like.
The
question is, Solly shot 78. Is that the number to beat?
It might be. leader in the clubhouse.
Right. Post one early, just kind of see what happens.
But I was amazed at... if you are driving it well here, how, and again, super easy to get up and down from around the greens and pound putts at the hole and have them stop there, how easy it was to make par. But if you miss the fairway, I think I doubled every hole that I was in the fescue.
No, exactly.
I mean, it happens exactly. So quickly out here.
And it was cool, and it will be really cool to watch. You know, I was the same way when I missed the fairway. I mean, I was dead. I had no recovery shot, but these guys will. You know, it's like, I think, KBV, I think you said it earlier that it's really inconsistent, which weirdly I kind of like. I mean, it's like a hazard. I mean, you know, it's meant to be unpredictable. You're not supposed to get a good lie if you hit it in there. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And it's like quite literally the rub of the green, you know. It just depends what happens. I think that's so cool to watch. I think that's really cool to see who handles those breaks well and who gets pissy and, you know, upset and lets it affect them. And, you know, I don't know. That's what I like about the US Open is just watching guys like on the edge of breaking down. I think that's the best.
It's a bit like Pinehurst when we played there last summer, where if you hit it in the sandy area, like you can be in a clump of the long grass and be totally dead. Like you are wedging back out into the fairway. But for the most part, you can play recovery shots from that. This is way more penal. This is like, maybe you'll get a good lie. I got one really good lie in the fescue today and could hit like a full 7-iron that went its full distance. Every other time I was in there, I should have taken a more lofted club than I did. But it's totally different kind of angle at, you know, there's going to be a premium on finding the fairway out here. So this past week saw a big win for yet another Callaway staffer. That was Aaron Wise at the AT&T Byron Nelson. He hit 90% of his fairways and greens for the week. I know they were big fairways and greens, but that's still pretty impressive. I think one of those was even a PGA Tour record or something within the last couple decades. I don't know. I didn't research that. He used his Rogue Driver and ChromeSoft X Ball, and after the round, he credited his Rogue Driver for giving him an advantage over the field with the soft conditions in the final round. It's yet another win for Jailbreak Technology, the graphene-infused ChromeSoft X golf ball with an Odyssey putter. For the full What's in the Bag info for Aaron Wise, check out CallawayGolf.com from Callaway Golf's new number one driver. And also, Callaway just posted a podcast with Mr. Wise after his victory. So for now, let's get back to our podcast about Shinnecock Hills.
Can we talk about 2004 a little bit?
Let's do it.
So, you know, everybody remembers 2004 for one thing, basically, you know, number seven, kind of getting baked out and bringing the hoses out. You know, Brendan, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you kind of had a pretty good take on this earlier.
It was, I mean, Davis tried to like head it off before like the Q&A. He's like, all right, I know we're here. You guys are going to start talking about 2004. The way they talked about it was like, I don't know, someone now talking about some sort of taboo social issue in the 50s or 60s. Like, I don't know. Like,
probably in a previous administration. No one here can be held accountable for those.
Yes,
you gotta remember, man, this is the early 2000s.
I mean, I'll try to make it more, I don't know, palatable for this pod. It's like, you know, like smoking on an airplane. Like, oh, it's just like how things were back then. And like,
you gotta remember this is a different time.
Yeah, it's like somebody talking about some social issue from the 50s. Like, that's just kind of how it was. And
he said it was not only a bogey, he said it was probably a double bogey by us.
And then
using equitable scoring.
Equitable scoring.
Which is good.
So I'm making a good joke. Sweet handicap joke.
He was prepared for that one.
Yeah, he was. I think he was. But it was still good delivery.
It was.
I'm in on Mike Davis.
Yeah, totally.
I was going to ask, do you guys trust the USGA in its current state in the way they set up golf courses?
Totally. I think so.
I think they've gotten incredibly unlucky on a lot of – and, you know, like the Dustin thing, and I'm sure there are other examples, but I think they've got like that, you know, is unluck, kind of bad luck, kind of brought on by yourself. But yeah. You know, I think they've gotten unlucky. I think Chambers was, honestly, I still think Chambers was really cool, and I kind of wish they would go back there.
I do too.
You're
I
big
loved,
Chambers.
I loved
Chambers.
It. Oh,
not
I thought it was,
during June.
I thought it was awesome. Yeah, the problem was the greens, and which, you know, again, that's their own fault, I guess. But I don't know. I thought Erin Hills was awesome in its own right too. I mean, I thought that was a cool, you know, they're trying to do the right thing in a lot of ways, where they're trying to, you know, they're trying to get away from, it seems like they're trying to get away from the Augustification of, you know, tree lined, tight, overwatered kind of places. And I think they've just, you know, like we said with Erin Hills, they got shit weather that just didn't make the course play the way it did.
Are we in the nest? Like,
I think we're in the nest.
Erin Hills was a success.
Yeah,
the conditions dictate the scoring, and the way the current technology is, how far these guys hit it, and how well they can spin the ball, and how they can do all these things, it is going to be. I'd so much rather them err on the side of scores being it being quote unquote too easy.
Also, it wasn't too easy for Rory, DJ, John Rahm, Jason Day.
Ejected.
Yeah, there were a lot of guys, the best players in the world, missed the cut. Yeah,
they just had too many par fives. Really, that's all. That's what it came down to. I mean, in relation to scoring, again, to me that doesn't really mean anything, but for so many people, it did. But the Open Championship scores are low all the time, and nobody cares because they let the conditions dictate the scoring. If the wind blew at Erin Hills, winning score might have been 8 under. So it was 16. It means nothing to me. I think
no one complained about Phil and Stenson setting the Open scoring record.
Correct.
And yet people complain about Erin Hills all the time. Why?
Not your grandfather's U.S. Open.
So, I mean, this is what he said. He goes, one of the questions I know we're going to get is, so I'm just going to hit it straight on, would be what happened in that final round in 04. So he just did it in the preamble. He goes, this quote was, it was a different time, it was different people. It was just like, I mean, it wasn't all different people. I mean, it was just like,
I heard some writers talking on the range, like, we still don't know whose decision it was to not water that green.
I thought it was just funny. I mean, they were totally cool. I think, like, and also Jeff Hall kind of really owned the DJ thing. I think you asked him about DJ. He's like, you know, what actually happened on the green was not that bad compared to our management of it. Yeah. Like, he really was like, our management of that issue.
He basically said, I asked him, said, what have you learned from the DJ incident? If that happened again, how would you handle it differently? And basically said, you know, when that happened, like, we were, like, scattered to the wind all throughout the course, the people who were going to make the decision. And so it took us, like, an hour to get everyone together and be like, all right, yes, he should be penalized for this, and we're going to make a decision. And meanwhile, he had to play on. So now, like, if that happened, they would basically make the decision rules-wise, like, while the player was walking off that green. And also, the rules are different now to where if a guy steps up to a putt and rolls backwards, he's just allowed to place it.
Did you notice he snuck in, like, you know, if a player moves the ball,
he
a player
did.
Causes
he
the ball
put
to
it
move,
on DJ.
I would be like, well, he totally I still did. Want to argue that one. Yep. I'm still not sure on that one. So after seeing the golf course, any style of player you guys think may play well out here? First of all, always the disclaimer. We don't know. We have no idea who's going to win.
We have no idea.
But do you see anything? You said KBV, you mentioned Tiger's not going to win out here.
Yeah.
Anyone that you see in particular that you think might succeed?
I don't know. It's an easy thing to say. Like, I think Jordan Spieth could be, but.
Oh, you took mine.
It did seem to me like approach shots, you know, that little wide fairways here, as long as you could kind of be in the fairway most of the time, you're going to be able to sort of hit it to certain spots. You know, he's really, that's what he does better than almost anyone, which is like proximity to the hole from however many yards. And so he's going to run in a number of those putts. And I think there will be enough of, it didn't seem to me like it was that hard to get up and down from certain areas. And I think he does that well enough to where I think it didn't. I don't know. I thought he would contend at Oakmont, and he completely was, you know, run out of there. So he was better at Erin Hills. He kind of got in, didn't really get in contention, but he played pretty well over the weekend after making the cut. So
I think Spieth would be. Yeah, right. I think it. I agree with you. I mean, he's. It's not surprising. I think I pick him to win every tournament. So
safest pick.
But he. I don't know. I mean, it felt entirely like a. Just I mean, it's a thinking golf course out there for sure. I mean, it is the ultimate, you know, you can't win it on Thursday, but you can lose it, right, type of place, you know. And I could see guys going crazy sideways if they're not driving it well or whatever, and Spieth just always seems to drive it well enough. I was kind of blown away, like, sorry, I think I remarked to you when we were at the Players, I'm blown away on like how far Spieth hits it. Yeah, still, yeah. Every time
totally
I watch him
far
play,
enough.
I mean, it's like...
I hope he never tries to hit it far.
Yeah,
I don't think he ever will. He doesn't seem to care about it.
As long as he's comfortable with that. Like, that's because that's how so many guys get screwed up, is trying to... All right, I need a little more distance. And then they just mess everything up.
And I think the putting has obviously been suspect for Spieth, but I think I have nothing to back this up, but just kind of gut is, you know, the U.S. Open, the greens are always so spicy and difficult that it kind of almost neutralizes... You know, like nobody really putts
he
well.
That was my
reasoning for taking DJ in 16.
Yeah,
I said,
exactly.
No one's going to really putt the Oakmont greens that great. I'm just going to take
so
the guy that bombs
taking,
it.
Taking and the best iron player at some level, you know.
If you can get hot, too. Like, Augusta's a good example of, like, he's not putted well all year, but for 14 holes, he can putt better than anybody in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And all of a sudden, the momentum is just like, you know, that putt he rolled in on 16 when we were standing off at Augusta this year.
Yeah.
Like, he just knew that was going in. He was like, oh, he had to put that 3 feet outside the hole, and he just, yep.
He still says he didn't even putt well that day. He's like, my ball striking was like that money, and he said I could have rolled in like several more 10-footers and shot whatever, 59.
Left a few out there.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's the thing about this U.S. Opens is, like, if it's, like, crispy and running hot, like, see somebody like Rahm, like, leaving his ball short and rolling back in a bunker, and it's like gone, Bubba, that kind of stuff.
Does Rahm have the temperament to win an Open, like a U.S. Open? I don't know.
I mean, I love, like, the Roses and Ricky. Like, it's just, that's easier to say. And Spieth, obviously.
It felt very Ricky as well.
Yeah.
I could see that, too.
Let's go to noted prognosticator DJ Pye here for who cannot win the U.S. Open at least.
Great question. Thank you so much for asking.
You crushed this one at the Masters.
I crushed this
year.
One. I said everybody pick one player who will not win the Masters, and I picked Patrick Reed. I think so. I got to check the tape. Yeah, I don't know. Don't start with me. Let me think about it. I'll answer. I'll get back on the horse, but give me a second to think about it.
What do you think?
You don't think Phil?
Yeah. I've not been encouraged.
Here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to pick a guy. So here's the thing about this game, which I appreciate what you pick in Phil. You got to pick a guy who could win.
Yeah.
It's not impressive if you're like, I don't think, like,
the sectional qualifier.
Chez Reavy, I don't think he's going to win.
Yeah.
I pick Rahm. I don't think Rahm can turn what would be a 74 into a 72.
Yeah.
You know, on a day when there's carnage everywhere. I think he'll just go completely ballistic. And I mean, literally, I walked with him at Erin Hills, and I watched him in succession throw a wedge, punch a sign, throw a rake, and then throw his ball like into the abyss.
He's a passionate Spaniard.
it's granted, the craziest thing about my John Rahm criticism is that John Rahm's personality is closely aligned to mine on a golf course. And so perhaps I'm able to identify the flaws better than most. But
maybe if you were to listen, tuned into the recent No Laying Up podcast with John Rahm, he discussed that specific incident. At Memorial and then leading into Erin Hills,
Kev,
and how he's learned from that.
Yeah, this was a different time. Man.
Yeah,
different time, different people.
This was different people. Yeah.
He did. When I asked him about it afterwards, I was like, "Hey, look, I don't want to criticize you because I'm kind of like this as well. But what, you know, how do you do it?"
I don't
it?
Want
and
you
he
to
was
beat
like,
me
I'm,
up either.
I'm like a Coke bottle. I just shake up. I need to explode, and then I'm better. You know, so.
For those that obviously can't see this, KB just shook a Coke bottle up and lost his headset mic in the process of doing that.
I gotta say,
this is a video of these podcasts.
You have to log in No Laying Up Plus to get the video
feed. It's on our Patreon content page.
Rory, what do we think?
That's what I was gonna say.
Rory.
I don't care if he wins. I hope he wins, which is why I'm picking him to not win. But I didn't get a lot of Rory vibes out there today.
Speed, I'm sticking with my JT pick from before the season.
To win or not win?
To win.
Oh, okay.
And
who do you think is going to not win?
Who's a not pick?
I don't care about who you
everybody
think's
else
win.
But JT.
Oh.
I'll say Tiger. I don't know if that counts as a pick, I think it's not a coincidence that all of Tiger's best finishes this year are in the state of Florida on flat golf courses. And this is like an undulated, I don't want to say nightmare for him, but this is like Quail Hollow. This is like Memorial. This is a tough walk, a lot of different slopes, a lot of different factors that aren't just like stock golf shots that he's played pretty well. That this is more of a Spieth kind of course where ball's going to be below your feet, above your feet, and different parts of the fairway and whatnot that he plays really well. So
this is I know this is obvious for anybody who's, you know, played here over the last 130 years, but I mean, this is like when people talk about land movement and scale and stuff in a golf course, I mean, this is like, it's like a video game. I mean, this was like this land was like designed to be a golf course.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's
good.
It's hard not
to
say
the shots are like so dramatic, but at the same time, it's like a beautiful walk. You're never like tired or anything.
We were talking
it's just
about
like,
on the way up.
Just
we were
so
like,
cool.
Like National Golf Links looks like.
That's the other thing you can see. I mean,
it'd be fun to play that course. And this is like, this would be a test. Like, I would love to see like what the people out here on Long Island feel like. If you're mega rich and you're like, you can join any of them. Did you join the one that fits your personality? Like, hey, you know what? I just want to play with some my guys and like have a great time. And I'm gonna see if I can join NLU.
I've got something to prove.
No, I want to go out there and grind over 6-footers.
Exactly.
So I'm gonna.
I have this like overhead pulled up on my screen of like all of the holes at Shinnecock, and you can see the ones at National next door. Uh-huh. The vast difference, like in the width of the fairways and the ease of the appearance of these holes, is apparent just from an overhead view.
But that is a cool thing. That I mean, I'm you know fairly novice when it comes to you know kind of the mega blue blood type of clubs, and I mean, I totally didn't realize coming up here just how jam-packed this whole area is with all these places. I mean, it's like I knew they're all kind of out on Long Island somewhere, but just being able to stand up at the clubhouse and they're like, oh yeah, that's so obviously that's Shinnecock, and then there's National, and there's Sabonic, and then Southampton's behind us. I'm like, holy shit, like this is insane.
It really is.
You had a good line. We were standing up on the clubhouse, so you can see, you know, like, you see the windmill. I was like, what's up with that like mini golf over there? Like somebody walked by and like gave you a side eye, like, oh, what's that? It's like, oh yeah. I was like, what's that windmill? I got a mini golf course.
Yeah, I was
there.
Screwing up the sight lines. It's disgusting.
We talk about the road that goes through the course.
I mean, way busier than I thought.
I hit a ball right as cars were peeling around the corner.
I thought it would.
That was like my best shot of the day.
Way less in play than it actually is. Oh, it is like totally an actual main road with cars just whizzing
by.
They
should just let that road stay open during the Open.
I would like to see that. That would be amping it up.
12?
If it doesn't firm up, they should let that road stay open.
Yeah,
12.
Tuckahoe, is that Tuckahoe Road?
Yeah. Right over the road.
13T is
coming. There's a couple. Cars don't even like flinch.
No.
Like how many times a year most cars get blasted with tee shots?
Our caddy said there's a local legend that someone hit it through two open windows one time. Which I said, if you know, your club has been around for like 130 years, like everything probably has got to go. But whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Somebody came down with a convertible down as I was about to hit. And I was a little psyched out. I was like, I could actually injure this person.
Well, there's some cool stuff. Just
Stinger 2 iron, I mean, right through these.
You know, I'm a big infrastructure guy. Not as big as Tron and Randy, but I'm up there. There's some cool, I don't know if cool is the right word, I guess, but there's some interesting infrastructure stuff just around this place, be it like the club trying to, you know, I think trying to buy that road basically and reroute it. I think like that's a whole thing.
Sure.
You've got like the Shinnecock Nation kind of bucking its head, the Native American tribe trying to.
What can you tell us about land disputes?
I'm way unqualified to discuss this. There's a New York Times story that just came out about how the relationship is fraying. I would point people to, but apparently I saw that they used to make like $100K each time the U.S. Open was here by just renting out their land to, you know, parking and corporate tents and stuff. And apparently that's gone away. They're not even interested in doing that anymore. So yeah, more to come. Could be some interesting stuff. Tournament week, we'll see.
Yeah, I saw several articles about how the Shinnecock Indian, the Shinnecock Native Americans are at odds with the USGA now. Yeah. That relationship is kind of on the ice.
There's some interesting.
It's all behind the paywall.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff on the. You got to pay for journalism. there's some interesting stuff. Just I mean, as simple as like the wiki page about like. How the land was initially obtained, and there's some sketchy, yeah. You know, signing of a 1,000-year lease that I think maybe some people had slipped in. There's a whole thing about some forging some signatures. It's very interesting. I would encourage you guys to dive in and educate yourselves, as I will do the same.
We were joking about earlier, but I feel a little bit uncomfortable like buying, you know. U.S. Open swag with the Native American sort of. I mean, I can't imagine there's a single Native American member at Shinnecock. Maybe I'm totally wrong.
Davis encouraged us.
Davis did like, say, yeah.
They use the word content. Like they've been talking. Like they're all happy millennials. A lot of
content talk, by Davis, the way, which we should get to in a minute. Because it sounds like some kind of cool stuff.
In his preamble, like his pre-opening remarks, he was like, and I would encourage you all, you know, this is good content. The 1896, the second U.S. Open, there was an African-American player and a Native American player, and they've had women from the beginning. He's like basically telling us, you need to write this story about, you know, hey, Shinnecock's, you know, been woke since 1896.
Here we are, incepted again.
Yeah,
we're
spreading his gospel.
We're regurgitating all the talking points. The whole women's club thing was kind of cool.
Yeah,
that is rare for sure. That you know they have been, you know, inclusive since the beginning. That's kind of cool. And the whole history of the club too, with like, I think Rainer McDonald originally, I guess what they had, they had originally redone was kind of like to plow under the. What was a ladies' course that everybody really loved. But apparently they had built like a 9-hole ladies' course as well to offset the whatever. Look it up. It's awesome. But yeah, it's a good.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
No. It's not for everybody, but it's interesting, I think.
Some of the things that they talked about in the presser today was the guy that was like in charge of content essentially was got up and pointed out all the things that Fox is going to be doing with the telecast. And I've been I've not been short on my praise of their improvement since 2015. People still really hate Joe Buck, which
I don't get it. Joe Buck.
We're gonna get to that.
You hate Joe Buck?
No, I think.
No. Oh, okay.
We're gonna get to that in future episodes here, but the graphic usage and all of the ways that they've integrated things, I think it's just it frustrates me with the way graphics and everything works with regular PGA Tour events and. On any network, and to see kind of Fox's integration and seeing how proud the USGA is with the Top Tracer and the Flight Scope, which is, you know, what the Golden Tee camera angle is that they kind of debuted, I think, in 2016. And
Flight Track. Flight Scope, I think, is what Bryson's in deep.
That's right. And then they have a new putting technology this year that shows kind of a cone.
Which I'm in on. I was like the Fidelity Green Line Golf Channel.
Yeah.
You're in on that? Oh, I thought that was like as good as it gets.
They used it for like some Euro Tour events.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's probably the best wall to wall coverage that you get for a golf event of the year.
I agree. I get like, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I think it's easy for, not easy, but I mean, it's convenient, I guess, that, you know, Fox only has to really, really, really blow out, you know, one mega major championship. I mean, but they do the women's and they do the, you know, the USM and they do all those, but obviously they're not quite on the same level. But, you know, it's easier for them to be thinking all year about doing, you know, the features like you'll see during the telecast and doing, you know, the brownie points type segments and doing like all these different things that they can build in that are kind of ancillary to, okay, now let's go to 16 to watch a live golf shot kind of stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be great. 12 holes with Flight Track, the other six holes with regular Top Tracer. And then the other cool thing is like the Top Tracer on the handheld cameras, which is a big deal. I mean,
out of the CBS
and all those, yeah. I think only have it kind of on like the lockdown stationary cameras. So just having the camera ops run around with with those things, which shout out to those guys. It just makes their job even
I'm
harder.
I'm surprised it hadn't inspired CBS to step up its game a little bit more. Like, you know, they don't have any.
We don't have time for that on this episode.
That reminds me of another thing.
Smallest detail, they also put the graphic of where the pin is. They put a little arrow to it's where the pin is and the yardage right there on the screen. So when you have the, you know, the top tracer with the arrow as to where it actually needs to go and the yardage, I think that is the complete package as far as what you can provide the viewer for. Because again, I mean, just being out here and seeing, I don't want to be the person that says it, but like, you should see in person the role of the fairways. It's not going to translate to TV and the elevation changes, but I think nobody does a better job of kind of helping illustrate that part than like the Brownie Point segments. I can promise you they're going to be out there rolling beach balls down some of these fairways and stuff like that. Yeah, I really hope so. Just to show you, to bring to life like what, you know, how these guys go from these super huge far back tee boxes to getting the ball in the hole. There's so much more that goes into it than shows up on a television screen.
I think that's the stuff that, I don't know, I mean, maybe I'm being a little too hashtag grow the game, but like, that's the stuff that makes you understand golf, I feel you know? And it's like, it's just, there's no context when you strip it down to, okay, here's a swing, and then now let's, for some reason, show the ball in the air against the backdrop of the sky, which doesn't teach us anything. And then they'll show it landing, and we have no idea how far
it is. I think
20
years from now that we're going to look at the ball in the air, like where the camera's following the ball, like we used to look at the terrible old Masters. Like,
you got to remember, this is a different time.
This is a different time. It's different people.
Yeah, people fought. You're totally right. Follow the ball in the air.
You got a little 360. I mean, a little VR.
Yeah, the 360, the 360 content. I don't really need my reality augmented, to be honest with you. I don't give a
shit
about
that. Not the best use allocation.
Super blurry. Yeah, I don't care about
on
that.
On an iPhone.
I think the thing, if I may, do we have a second? The VR stuff in golf makes absolutely no sense.
Got a good take on this. I like your
line. In football, I think it's phenomenal, and I cannot wait to, like, I want to feel like I'm the quarterback, and I want to look in a bunch of different directions and see a bunch of people chasing after me. Golf, like, there's fucking one thing to see. That's it. Like, that's all I want to see is one thing.
Can I draft off this take?
Please. Oh yeah. Let me come down
just
and then
you serve it up. I'm ready.
I'll tap you in.
But
it's I don't get why you would want to look anywhere except for the guy, the one person who's hitting one ball in front of me at one time. Like, I don't get it.
Which is already hard enough to do.
Which is already
with
hard enough.
The cameras that are focused on that, as
exactly.
opposed to the blurry stuff. That's
I couldn't be more out on that.
Are
stuff.
You ready for this?
Please.
Literally, no one who is watching this VR bullshit is like, I love this. Like, I want more of this. This is some like junior executive being like, oh God, I need to justify whatever money that I'm, whatever six failures I'm making. So I'm going to convince these old people who have nothing to, like, no understanding of what we're doing here, that VR is the future. And so we're going to throw a bunch of this crap out. And the people who, like, make the decisions are like, all right, great. You're young and you're woke and we're deciding that we're paying you to fix this and or to connect with the youngs. And it's just complete nonsense.
I don't get, like, I think it's companies like these big golf companies that kind of keep these like VR tech companies in business.
Yeah. Yes.
Basically with like, hey man, I know this technology is a good like 12 years off, but I met this dude at this dinner party the other day that I think is going to float us for like 6 years and just get us through, you know, what we need to do to actually make the.
How do we
and
get so in on this about so that, VR
so
money?
That's, if I'm going to hedge my take a little bit, because if it does become like a big thing and it becomes something that everybody's super into, like, I get the thought process of, you know, going.
Let's be out in front of it.
Yeah, and getting out in front of it and getting used to using it. Like, I do get that. I just don't think it's ever going to get there with golf.
It's
or not in this way.
It's not done well right now. Yeah. That's the point.
Let's focus on all the other things that are not right.
Yeah, I don't know why that fired me up so much. I apologize for derailing the conversation. But
another good thing, though, I think it's cool is they're doing. Well, Fox just has good talent, I think, from the beginning.
Our boy Shane Bacon is going to be.
Yeah. Azinger is obviously just
a front second booth. Right? He's leading the second booth.
He crushed it on your Azinger.
Watch
crushed
your
back,
on Joe.
Your pod. Bacon is obviously a friend of the program, friend of ours,
friend of the
and
pod.
It's really cool how they're going to do two booths. And they got Curtis, who looks like come in breathing some fire.
The
takes
spicy curmudgeon.
Yeah, they just the original got spicy a good mix of people, you know. Yeah. Gil Hance is involved. Like
Gil Hance is awesome on TV.
Think about how much we kind people. Of made fun of Fox the first year around.
Made yeah. fun of. We roasted them.
Right.
And it was bad.
And to their credit, they listened to it.
They
were like, they responded and were like, how can we make this better?
Yeah.
It's
still not perfect.
I still contend that in that first year, even in that first year, you could see like, okay, this was bad, but like it's gonna get there.
But if Greg Norman had fallen asleep in the booth, you know,
yeah,
you
yeah. And yeah, he gone.
Yeah. Train rolling by here.
Yeah, Long
Island
the
grounds. But no, it's not a perfect broadcast. They make probably more mistakes during the day than anyone does. But
that stuff
it's forgivable.
Me.
I'm cool with that. With the willingness to go outside the box with so much stuff that they do and the focus on live golf shots. And it's a major. I'm not going to sit there and count the live golf shots, but yeah. It's noticeably different. So.
They need a good one and kind of deserve a good one.
Yeah,
I don't know that last year was like the most riveting Sunday.
I feel like Oakmont
was riveting.
They kind of got their money was worth.
Thanks to the USGA. Yeah,
Chambers was great, but they weren't they didn't know what they're doing yet really well. And like, you know, it was a great tournament, but Fox was just getting its feet wet.
Maybe
that
Oakmont was
wild.
Maybe it was faked for ratings. Has anybody had that take?
No, I love this take.
I can see that.
Conspiracy.
Maybe they're crisis actors.
I would watch a replay of. I'd watch a replay of the last the back nine at Chambers. Brandon Gray, or Louis says he shot like 29, like he finished one shot of a playoff, no one even noticed. And Brandon Grace hit a train, and
Rory was like 8 under through made a run. 15, yeah. I think. I was with him like that much that day. I was there when Spieth. I was standing like greenside when Spieth made that putt on 16, and like turned to the sound, the Puget Sound, and just screamed.
Duh.
That was awesome.
It was sick. And then he made double the next hole. Very forgotten. Again, that's why we need to rewatch it.
Yeah. So. People forget.
People forget.
It would just be good to see them get a good, like a really good,
yeah,
good leaderboard.
So. I mean, I think this is like all things seem to be set up. I mean, I think a lot of it is, and it's crazy that it's like this, but I think a lot of it just kind of comes down to weather. I think like if the course plays the way that they want it to, I think it is going to be spectacular.
There's a reason why they keep coming back to certain golf courses.
Yeah.
And like their two anchors are going to be Oakmont and this one, and I think that's I don't know. I think we're going to get a good tournament regardless of how the conditions play out. They obviously want it to be firm.
I mean,
but
we'll be 60 years old, and Oakmont, Pebble, and Shinnecock will still be in
I hope
rotation.
So.
Like, those are the three, I think, that
T-Box is going to be on Southampton and National Golf Links.
It'll be in VR.
Yeah.
They got some I think they're also – they're ready to bring the crowd out and get them all lubed up. They got the beer garden. They've got, like, these trains and buses just bringing them out from Manhattan.
Last thing I want to give a quick shout-out to them on is they're doing a little more U.S. Open sectional coverage, which is one of my – it's, like, one of my favorite days. That's, like, the most inside baseball I know, they're doing the like a little Facebook live show. It sounded
all day,
like
it's on
all day, which is that's cool. I'm in on
for
that.
Next year, what golf channel used to qualify?
I think that's like the I said
this is Tiger's last year of exemption.
That's right.
I mean,
he's rapidly working his way into the top 60 in the world, though.
That's true. So let's say Tiger stays where he is. How many exemptions should Tiger get for US Open?
It's a good question.
All of
them.
Arnie got 5 or 6, but it was over like a. The last one he played, he was like 60 years old. Jack got like, I want to say 7.
So you give him one at Pebble, obviously.
Absolutely.
And then we go to Wingfoot. All right, he's got no history. Wingfoot, kick him out of there.
Grind that 36, you know, walk through.
Phil should get exempt for Wingfoot.
We'll see you at Columbus, Tiger.
All right, on that note, let's wrap it there. Gentlemen, thank you for joining at the end of a long day. Let's go sample what Long Island bars have in store for us. I've never been here. Let's go find out.
Cheers. All right. Thanks for having us.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect it.